talk.
Okay, so Elisheva has been asking for this shiur for some time, and I apologize that it's only now that I've gotten around to it. I think she asked it originally at the end of October. But you know, one thing has led to another, and we didn't get to it till now. But Baruch Hashem, now we're here. Organ donation. 10 years ago, Israel had a major problem, and still has something of a problem. But 10 years ago, we had the following scenario, that most of the world has around 30 to 40% of its population carrying organ donor cards. That's usually the case in Europe, North America. Israel had 4% of the population carrying donor cards. And that was problematic for many reasons, the most important of which was we had no organs. We used to be a member of the European Organ Donor Network to switch across borders to give organs, but they threw us out. Not because they were somehow anti-Israel, I suspect, or I don't know if there was any of that involved, but I've no reason to believe that. But because we gave no organs. All we ever did is take everyone else's organs, and we didn't have any to give. Not because we were mean, but because we just didn't have any organs, because people don't donate their organs. Why? Why are the Israelis so unhappy to donate organs? And it's not because everybody is religiously observant in this country. Not everybody is religiously observant. But most people are very traditional. And traditionally, Jews know there's one thing they can't do, right? Can't have a tattoo, can't donate your organs. Okay? Why can't you? Okay, that's not true. I'm not saying that. I'm saying traditionally that's what people thought. No, wait. Don't worry. Well, and therefore, Israel passed a new law in 2008, which was designed to improve the organ donor situation. To the point that now they gave priority, for example, people who carry organ donor cards have priority to receive organs in the end, God forbid that they need them. And they've managed to pull up the population, the proportion to about 14%, okay, which is a lot higher than 4, but nevertheless is a lot lower still than most other countries. Why is it that people don't feel that they should carry organ donor cards in this country? So I think, again, because most people are not necessarily halakhically observant, it's a combination of a few things. What do you think of, why do you think people are nervous to carry organ donor cards? You get in the mindset of an average non-religious Israeli. Or religious Israeli. Yeah?
They might
encourage
your organs when
they're not sure of your death. So there's one issue, which is, how do they know that the person is really dead when they take away the organs? Now, in many people's minds, that might just be a kind of nervousness that I hope that they don't, you know, make a mistake. You read these stories of, you know, this guy was about to have his organs taken out, or something, opened his eyes and woke up. Obviously, that's not standard. They do test very carefully, but people are nervous. But not just that. Halakhically, we'll see, the main issue of organ donation is, when do we define someone as halakhically dead? If you cut somebody open and take away their organs before they're halakhically dead, there's a word for that. What's that?
Murder.
And you can't murder people to save other people. I mean, you can do almost anything to save other people in halakha. You can break Shabbos and you can eat tripe and you can do... But you can't murder people to save people. That you can't do. You can't murder one person to save 1,000 people. Therefore, there is that concern. But there are other concerns as well. People worry about the fact that if they take organs away, will they come back for Tchiyas Sameisim? Will they be resurrected without their organs? A lot of people think that's a real concern. It's not really a concern, is it, halakhically? I mean, what's left of people anyway after a few years having been buried? The fact that they happen to be buried without their kidneys is not actually going to make so much of a difference 50 years down the line as to what's left in their grave, but people are worried about that. But that's not a real issue halakhically or even hashkafically. On the contrary, they may be saving people's lives. Isn't that a tchus that you want to go to Shamayim, having the final act, having saved the lives of how many people? Surely that's the major issue. But there are other questions as well that people have. People are unhappy. Do they have to bury the dead whole? A lot of people say, isn't there a mitzvah to bury a person whole when they die? And that's true. There is a mitzvah. We'll deal with that as well. And there are all sorts of other issues too. There are ethical issues. I've given a list. I'm not getting into answering all of these. But these are questions that come up. We said, when is the moment of death? Generally, is that a medical decision? Who decides when a person's dead? Is it the doctors? Or is it the lawyers? Or is it the rabbis? Or priests? Or whoever you're asking. Who can choose whether to donate organs? Should it be the choice of the person? What about the family? What about the doctors? What about the government? In some countries, there's an automatic opt-in unless you opt out, meaning there's an assumption that you will donate your organs, unless you carry a card saying, I won't donate my organs. Is that correct? Should they do that? Or should it be a private choice? I'm not answering all these questions today. Should there be prioritization? Should certain groups get more priority access to organs than others? Again, some people feel this is very immoral, but in this country there is a priority to people who carry cards to receive organs. Other people say, no, that's only fair. If you're prepared to be a donor, then you should be prepared, you should be prioritized to be a receiver. Should you sell organs? Or is that just asking for corruption? There's an awful lot of problems in, you know, India and places like that where there are, you know, backstreet black markets in organ sales. They take organs, kidneys, things out of people. Poor people, poor Indians who can make more money by selling an organ than they can in years of working in whatever job that they do. And these people obviously are pressured into doing that. Or even if they're not pressured, is that correct or ethical that they do that? What about animal organs? Do we have any issues, bless you, with animal organs? Do we have a problem if somebody puts a pig organ in a person, in a Jewish person? And Jewish people have a lot of negative things to, you know, say about pigs. They're not into that. But actually, pig organs are very, very good matches in many ways, sort of physiologically, meaning there's no point having mouse organs transplanted or elephant organs, you know, ain't going to help. But pig organs, actually, if you think about the sort of trunk of a pig, it's very similar to the... But is that offensive in some way, ethically? And halakhically, we said there are some issues, the time of death, treatment of the human corpse, we'll deal with in a minute, obligation to bury the dead. Is there a mitzvah to give organs? What about during your life? Is there a mitzvah to give organs? We'll talk about that too. People also sometimes are worried about the evil eye, meaning is it an eye in horror? Is it talking about after death? Is it p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p-p- it's a positive thing to organize for after your death. People buy the plot, people buy the shrouds, you know, people really get into the organizing, and they don't feel that that is some way like a ayin hara. So why this should be any different is a good question. And we talked a little bit about resurrection. So let's have a look here at some of the halachic issues. There actually aren't that many sources on this sheet, but there's a lot to talk about as well. First of all, let's just go through a bunch of halachic issues which are really not ultimately problems with organ donation. First of all, the mitzvah to bury. Bottom of page one, okay? Where do we see in the Torah there's a mitzvah to bury people? Number one, ki yeh ve'ish chet mishpat mavet behumat, but talita also ala eitz. If a person has a death sentence, we're talking about a criminal, he has been killed for a capital crime, and then they have a mitzvah to hang for certain kinds of executions, they hang the body, not they don't kill the person by hanging, there's no killing by hanging in halacha. They hang the body on a pole afterwards, okay, as a sign that this person has committed such a terrible crime. Says the Pesukim, Lo talin nivlato alayitz. You must not, under any circumstances, leave that body hanging overnight. Ki kavar tikvarenu, you must bury them. B'yom hahu, on that very day. Ki kila said, ukim talui, because to leave them hanging is an insult to God, a human being, no matter what they did. No matter who they were, they're at Selam Elokim. And therefore, to leave that human corpse on a tree overnight is disgraceful. The lost tameetat matcha, don't cause tumor to your land. By the way, we learn this as a kal v'chomer. If this is true of a low-life criminal, who cares what happens to his corpse? No, the Torah says absolutely not. He deserves a burial. This is all the more so true of a regular person. This is where we learn the mitzvah to bury him very quickly. Everybody knows the Jewish people are very quickly. That day, if they can. If somebody, God forbid, dies in the Yerushalayim now, quarter to six, they'll be buried before the end of the night. They'll be buried at 4 o'clock in the morning if they have to be. That's why they have all the cars coming around, you know, in Haranov. Yeah, and unless you know what they're talking about, when I first came to live in Israel, I had no clue what was flying. There was this guy with a van, you know, going around with a loudspeaker. I thought they were saying run for the nuclear bunkers. I don't know what they were saying. Of course, they're saying that such and such a person has died, and you can't wait to read something in the newspaper when the funeral's going to be. We wait for the newspapers, or we finish with a shiver. Okay? They bury people quickly. And therefore, clearly there is a mitzvah to bury somebody quickly. If they're having an organ transplant, will the donor be delayed? The answer is, maybe yes, maybe no, but actually, pikuach nefesh, saving a life, will override that. As I said, pikuach nefesh overrides almost everything. And therefore, if there is a problem with delaying the burial, that problem will go away if you tell me that there's real pikuach nefesh. It may not be quite the same if you're harvesting organs to kind of store in case you need them one day. Which is usually not what happens. Usually organs have they go for a match and they have a certain person that's found and the person gets the organ quickly. But if you are harvesting organs just to put them on ice, if you like, then there's a shyness to how that works. But even then, it's not so straightforward. Yes, Michelle?
That's because next to life.
Why not? You're saving a life. You're giving someone else the organ.
Yeah, but how about delay you would bury?
No, because... Because that organ might not be buried for a while, if it's hanging around, maybe it won't be buried at all because it's going to someone else. But the body itself that has to be, it depends on the procedure. When the body is dissected, if you like, and the organs are taken out, is that something which then delays the burial of the body? Yes. And I don't know what they do. How long do they wait, or do they not wait? Yes.
Does it apply to a non-Jew?
Yes, in many situations it does. It's not quite the same. I'm not saying it's the same halachic rubric, but and depending on the circumstances, it turns out not to make the difference, because the real issue is not these issues. The real issue is time of death in halacha. Okay, but pikuach nefesh will apply in different scenarios to Jews and non-Jews in different ways. For example, in Hilchos Shabbos, you break Shabbos to save the life of a Jew. You also, in practical terms, break Shabbos to save the life of a non-Jew, but not for necessarily for the same reasons. It has a different halachic framework as to how that works.
But for this case, it applies the same way?
I'm not sure it applies exactly the same way, okay? But in practice, it doesn't become that relevant, because the real issue is the issue of the time of death, I think. Definitely, that's the real issue. And as far as I've seen, it's all very interrelated. For example, usually speaking, when you donate organs, as far as I'm aware, there is no way to in any way specify, and I think this will be seen extremely negatively by the non-Jewish world as a whole, to specify, yes, I give my organ, but I only want it to be used for a Jew.
Unless it's like a live donation.
If it's a live donation, then you give your money and your whatever to whoever you want. And I think it's reasonable to prioritize, but I think, I mean, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but if Jewish people donated their organs but specified non-Jews may not receive this organ, I think that would be a terrible chilul Hashem, no? And not only would it be a chilul Hashem, but it actually can have implications beyond that individual case. I'll tell you why. I'm sure many doctors will completely deny this. I have no doubt about it. But I was told very clearly by a senior rabbi who has been told by very senior medical practitioners and physicians that it's well known in certain circles, in the medical circles, that Jews don't give organs. And when doctors are trying to prioritize who receives organs, it's very difficult for them to leave behind this idea that Jews don't give, so they don't deserve. Now, I'm sure that you ask 1,000 doctors, 1,000 doctors will say, that could never happen. It would be unethical, it would be terrible. But the question is, does it happen? Not could it happen? And therefore, I think, Sheva, if there was a concern that Jews were only giving their organs to other Jews, I think that could have a very significant impact on saving Jewish lives as well. You may actually cost Jewish lives in the long run. It's difficult to kind of work that one out. Now, the next point. What about nivul hameitz? What about interfering with the body in a way which is degrading? This raises the questions of autopsies. Are autopsies acceptable in halakha, or are they not acceptable in halakha? And autopsies are very hot issues in this country. Every now and then there are mass demonstrations and maybe even riots against autopsies, because certain parts of the community say, no, autopsies are absolutely prohibited in halakha. It's not allowed. The Gemara actually discusses autopsies. In an interesting context, when a person was murdered and we are going to execute the murderer, there's an interesting halacha that if the person who was killed actually turned out to be suffering from a life-threatening illness independent of the murder, then the murderer is still a murderer. You can't go around killing people just because they happen to have terminal cancer. But they don't get executed. If the victim was what's called a traitor, meaning they weren't going to live anyway, then the perpetrator will not be executed. So the Gemara discusses, well, maybe then when we have a murder victim, we need to do an autopsy. Why? Because we need to see if that person was anyway ill, and if they were, then we won't kill the criminal, and we'll save a human life. Okay? And the Gemara discusses whether that's possible, and concludes that if indeed it were possible to ascertain that, we would do the autopsy to save life. But in the end, the Gemara says, look, you never know if it's going to work or not, because the fatal illness might be just where the murder, you know, happened, and therefore you might not be able to tell. But in principle, it says that we would do an autopsy to save a human life. In principle. Therefore, again, even though there is a problem of nibul hamet, we are not allowed to degrade in any way a human body after death. We treat it with utmost respect. That issue will go away if there is will pekuach nefesh. There's a long tshuva of the Node of Yehuda in number 3, which I'm not going to get into reading the whole thing, where he says clearly that there is even safek pekuach nefesh. We don't know if it'll save. Don't forget, every organ donation is safek pekuach nefesh, isn't it? We don't know if it'll work. We don't know if it'll save a life. We don't know if it'll be rejected. But nevertheless, even safek pekuach nefesh will override nibul hamet, as long as, he says, look at the last line. In the penultimate line, he says, "Afilu safek, even a question of this nature, doche Shabbat, will even push off Shabbat." Or in a second, hachamura, which is so important, nevertheless, pekuach nefesh, even safek will push it off. But amnum. However, he says, "Kol zeh b'sheyesh safek sakanas nefashas lefanenu." There has to be a present pekuach nefesh, meaning not a theoretical pekuach nefesh. Meaning organ donation is acceptable in terms of nibul hamet. We're getting onto other issues in a minute. In principle, it's acceptable if there's a real pekuach nefesh. But what if a person wants to leave their body to medical science? That they're going to be, you know, dissected for the next, I don't know how many months. You never know. Somebody might discover a cure for cancer based on the dissection they did on that body. The answer is that's not pekuach nefesh. That's too removed. We don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. Otherwise, we'd say to all the scientists, you don't have to keep Shabbos. Don't keep disliking the Shabbos that you discover a cure for cancer. We don't say that, because that's not pekuach nefesh. That has to be a real case. Yes?
So, when someone dies, a Jew needs to be sitting in the room with that person until they get buried.
They don't need to be sitting in a room until they get buried.
They have to be with them.
Yeah.
To keep them.
That is a separate halacha, that when a person has died, there has to be someone who's like a shomer, okay, there with them. The purpose for that was to make sure that mice and rats didn't get to the body, okay? Because that would also be a disgrace for the body, therefore they have people shomering there. Today, when they have other ways of storing bodies in a morgue, in freezers and things like that, where there's no other way, that might not be quite the same, although a lot of people do feel that they definitely have to have people there with the bodies. I've done that quite a few times, sat with bodies, and it's a good way to focus on your thoughts, actually. I was joking. So it might not be needed in all situations, and it might not be possible in all situations. Meaning, it's one thing if the body's being buried like tomorrow morning. It's another thing if there's going to be some long drawn out, you know, procedure, technocratic, you know, police procedure is going to be fight for a week. Not going to be possible necessarily. But I'd recommend sitting with a dead body. It definitely helps to get you to put life into perspective. Yes?
The idea that there has to be like a pekuach nefesh present,
yes,
at this time, so there's like a really short window for actually removing organs,
yes,
from a dead person.
Yes.
So if you don't know who the organ is going to, but there's like a good probability that someone needs it, you just like
right,
kind of located them.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly the way the place can go on that, but my understanding is that there's such a need for organs in the world that even if there isn't a need right here and right now, there's a good chance that organ will be extremely useful for pekuach nefesh.
Like in an hour.
Yes,
two,
soon. You know, very soon. There's only so long that they can keep the organs, even on ice. They don't last forever.
A few hours.
Yeah, exactly. Therefore, I think we can assume that there is a real pekuach nefesh. And your point, Elisheva, before is that almost certainly that pekuach nefesh is for someone in the population at large. It's not going to be, there are very few Jewish people in the world, and the chances of a Jew needing that organ right now, I don't think it's just a Jewish issue at all. There is another final issue which I get to before I get to the main point, which is there is an issue to have any benefit from a non-Jewish, from a non-Jewish or a Jewish corpse, in principle. But again, pekuach nefesh will override that, because that prohibition is going to be set aside in the face of pekuach nefesh, like other things. The Shulchan Aruch in number 5 asks an interesting question. Are you allowed to steal to save your life? If you're walking past a shop and you're dying of thirst and you're about to, you know, expire, can you break into the shop and steal a bottle of water to save your life? What do you think?
Yes.
But there's one condition. Look at number 5. Afilu hu b'sakanat mavet. Even if you're about to die, but tzarech l'gzol et chaveru, you have to steal from another person kedei lahatzil nafshek, to save your life. You can, but tzarech shelo yikachenu ela al dat l'shalem. You can only take it if you have intention to pay back. Okay, I'm sure you'll have that intention if you're about to die and say, sure thing, when I'm better, I'll buy another bottle of water. The problem is, that's fine if you're stealing a bottle of water, but if someone didn't give permission to give their organs, and somebody else decides to steal those or to take those organs without permission, how are they ever going to save a life? How are they ever going to pay back? Unless you say the mitzvah of saving a life is, you know, the payback. And you have to also ask the question, who owns the organs of a dead body? Who owns the dead body?
Paying it back, like, the actual item or the value of the item, the monetary value?
Monetary value. We're talking about gazelle here, it's the monetary value. But does a dead body own anything? A dead body is not alive, it can't have ownership.
But they're, like, whoever's supposed to inherit them.
Oh, so you're telling me that the Yorshim, the people who inherit it, they own the organs. Can they decide against the wishes of the person who died?
So the thing is, a person, like, steals an organ from a person who didn't give their permission.
Yes.
And whoever is supposed to inherit that person, I guess, they own their body. So let's say a kidney is worth $100,000. I don't know how you like evaluate that.
Right.
Pretend.
I'm not sure, by the way, that the inheritors own the body at all.
Okay.
I'm not sure that necessarily follows.
Well, if someone owns the body, could you not just pay the value of the organ?
To who? To the inheritors? To
the owner of the body. Are
we
going to say,
is
I literal right now?
Not quite. We're getting a little sidetracked, and I don't want to do that because I want to talk about the main issue. But that's just a concern. By the way, this comes up in other areas. If a person specifies before death they want certain things done with their body after death, and that's not halakhically acceptable, then we do override that. Someone says, I want to be cremated. And the children do not want the person to be cremated. So, you know, they don't have to abide by the wishes of that person. Because halakhically you're not allowed to be cremated. The problem comes when there are different children who want different things. There was a famous case a while ago, I think it's in an article written, something called the $25 million burial or something like that, where they had a person died and he had two sons. One was a non-Jewish child from a marriage with a non-Jewish woman, and one was a Jewish child from a subsequent marriage with a Jewish woman. And the non-Jewish son insisted the father had to be cremated. The Jewish son insisted the father had to be buried, and they couldn't agree. And in the end, the non-Jewish son said to the Jewish son, if you give me your half of the inheritance, which was a fortune of money, then you can do what you like. And the question then was, you know, how much in order to bury the father? And there's a whole article written on it and how that played out. And then he gave the money to the other one to bury the father, whatever. So that's also slightly off topic, but something to think about. Now, the real issue in organ donation, it's not nibble hamates, although that's important, but pikuach nefesh will override. It's not using a dead body or delaying the burial, because again, pikuach nefesh overrides. The real issue is the person dead? If they're not dead, then there's nothing to talk about. You can't kill people to save people. You can't kill one to save many. You can't kill old people to save young people. We don't just walk around the hospital shooting all the old people, saying, look, you know something, you've lived a long and useful life. Now is your time to help someone else to live. Okay? God forbid we should do that. I think most people in the secular world would also agree that that is immoral. Okay? And certainly for us, it's not just immoral, but it's completely against the halakha. So, the problem arises like this. If you want the organs to be of any use to someone else, they have to be oxygenated. There's no point giving a very seriously sick person an organ that doesn't work. They don't need that. They need an organ that does work. Therefore, a fresh, healthy organ is essential. If you wait till a person's heart has stopped beating, and you're sure 100% that that's it, they're dead, almost certainly it's too late to get the organ out in any useful way. There are a few organs that work a little bit better with less oxygen. Kidneys work a little bit better. Corneas oxygenate through the air, etc. But most organs, hearts, lungs, they're not going to be of any use, really, to anybody. And therefore, almost all organ donation is done from people whose hearts are still beating, but their brainstem dead. And therefore, the definition of death has moved over the years in most societies from being cardiac to being brainstem. Meaning, 50 years ago, someone lying on a hospital bed whose heart was beating was alive in law, in American law. If someone came in and cut them open and took all their organs out, they're a murderer. They get a chair for that in certain states. Today, that self-same exact person is dead. Why? Because now we define death not by the heart, but by the brain. Now, why did we change that over the last 50 years? Let's leave aside our locker for a minute. Why did that change? So some people will turn around and say, it changed because now we can measure brain activity. And we never knew, could do that before, so now we have a more accurate way of looking at it. If you want to be more cynical about it, you might argue it changed because we want people's organs. Meaning, given that we can now save lives with organs, the first heart transplant was in the end of the 60s, the first successful transplants were in the 80s, given that organs are now useful for society, it's convenient that we've redefined death in order to allow us to take out the organs. Now, I'm not suggesting that that is the motivation, but it's hard to escape from the possibility that that might be the motivation, and that's a problem. You can't just kill people to save other people. Also, I think many people out there in the world would regard turning off, whatever that means, a sick person who has no quality of life as almost like a mercy. Yeah? There's a whole debate about euthanasia, which we're not even having now, although it kind of overlaps. Most people would see this as like as a chesed almost. Whereas we're not going to say that if it's going to be murder, because life is life. You don't know what's going on inside people's minds. And even a second of life is, we break Shabbos, as we'll see in a minute, but even a minute, a second of life, because life is infinitely precious in and of itself. So how are we going to define death? So there are a number of different options. There is no one moment that you can define that that is from life to death. Of course, like hashkafically, death is obviously the point at which the soul leaves the body. But that's not very helpful because we can't measure that with a machine in a hospital room. So we have to find some other way. The body does not die all at once. For example, even when the person as a whole is dead, there are still parts of the body that continue to live. There is molecular life in organs even significant days after the body. The person is now as a holistically dead. So we're not going to wait till every cell in the body dies in order to define that as death. Okay? The main contenders are heartbeat, which you can tell, meaning, are we going to say when the heart stops, that's death, or brainstem. We'll talk about that in a minute, okay? Obviously, from an organ donation perspective, if we define it as heartbeat, halakhically, that cuts out pretty much all organ donations. If we define it as brainstem, that opens the door to organ donations. And we need to work out what that's going to be. Two other options which we do not follow in halakha. One of them could be kind of clinical death. When you see a person was clinically dead for 5 seconds or for a minute until they revive them. Meaning, when somebody is clinically dead, it means that they are actually dead, but that is reversible. Or, let's not say they're dead. That they are in a situation where they might continue to be there, but you can reverse it. CPR. Meaning, do we turn around with a person who is clinically dead and say, CPR is chias amesim? Which would have massive implications, if you think about it. For monetarily, halakhically, who owns all their... The answer is, we don't. We don't say that death is... clinical death is death because it's reversible. Once it's reversible, it can't be death. We'll see that it's very clear that halakhically death has to be irreversible. The other option which we reject is other states of coma and permanent or persistent vegetative states. Meaning there's quite a few people who have brains that are inactive for all sorts of reasons. Different parts of the brain are inactive. We'll talk about that in a minute. And yet the brainstem is still alive. We do not say that someone in a coma or in a PVS, okay, is dead. Most legal jurisdictions in the world also do not say that someone in a coma is dead. But it's not impossible to define it that way, and it might well be that they do decide that someone in a coma is dead. Halacha is not going to decide that, okay, as far as I can see, but that is an option, and in some systems that might be considered. Now, let's go to page 3. We've got a lot to do. And we've got 25 minutes to go. There are 3 basic support systems that keep the body going. The brain, the respiratory breathing system, which is actually triggered by the brain stem, meaning there is a connection. I'm not a medic, by the way, so if you have medical knowledge which you can help with, then I'd like to hear it. But I don't think any of you are doctors either. One of you are doctors. Okay, it's always good to have a doctor in the house. Well, for obvious reasons as well. But it's always good to have a doctor in the shir to help with the shir. But there's breathing, which is defined by, which is controlled by an automatic reaction from the brainstem, which controls the breathing mechanism. Okay, and then there's heartbeat, cardiac, circulatory system as well. Now, what's interesting is that whilst breathing depends on the brain, no brainstem, no spontaneous breathing. It cannot work without the brainstem, because you can keep a person ventilated by an artificial respirator, but without a brainstem, they cannot breathe. There is no way. The heart, however, can continue to work even in the absence of a brain, even if there's no brain at all. You can keep the heart going with oxygen. It will keep itself pumping happily. The heart works on a different system. Think about it. It's not connected to the mains, if you like. It's got its own battery. In fact, when the baby is forming in the womb, the cells which will become heart cells are twitching in and of themselves. They twitch like this. They squish like this. And then when they meet another one that's going to be a heart cell, they squish together. Okay? It's unbelievable, actually. I sort of saw a video of this. It has its own system. That's why people who are brain dead for days and days and days can have hearts that will continue. As long as you keep giving them oxygen, the heart will continue. Okay? That's important to know. What is brain death? People talk about brain death. What it basically means is that the brain stem has died irreversibly. As far as I'm aware, we are not able to reverse, with the medical knowledge we have today, we're not able to reverse brain stem death. How can brain stem death happen? Well, basically what happens is the brain stem loses oxygen, and as it loses oxygen, it leaks fluid, and as it leaks fluid, it builds pressure, and that causes even less oxygen to come. Usually what happens is there's some kind of a head injury, and because of the head injury, the cranial pressure, the intracranial pressure develops and grows, and at the point at which the pressure inside the head is more than the pressure, the blood pressure of the heart coming up, the brain starts to starve from oxygen and doesn't get the oxygen it needs. At that point, the brain starts to die, and the brainstem can itself die. Even when the brainstem is dead, they have discovered that there is still potentially activity in other parts of the brain. Not conscious activity, but it doesn't mean the whole thing is shut down, which is interesting, because that's a relatively new medical, as far as I'm aware, awareness. But the brainstem basically shuts down, it has no oxygen, and thereby spontaneous breathing is at an end. The heart may continue, like I said, but there's no more breathing unless you intervene. Now, what does the halakha say? Can we find an answer to the question between brainstem death and heart, cardiac activity? So the answer is, I'm afraid to say, it's really not clear. There are two very major heavyweight positions in the world of halakha, one of which says that brainstem death is acceptable. Organ donation is possible and is a mitzvah as long as we can ascertain that the brain death has happened. The brainstem death is absolutely acceptable and the definition of halakhic death. And there is another equally heavyweight group of people who say, no way, that is not how the sources speak. Brainstem death is not the definition of death. Heart cessation, cardiac activity is the definition of death. And I want to show you a little bit, just give you a feeling for how these sources play out, because they're not conclusive one direction or the other. Let's have a look quickly here at source number 6 at the bottom of page 3. There is a pasuk in Parshas Noach about the people who died in the flood. Kol asher nishmat ruach chaim ba'apav mikol asher b'charava meitu. Anyone who had the breath of life in their nostrils died. Now, does that mean that life is in the breathing? Or not? Meaning, is that defining where life is? We'll see in a minute the discussion in the Gemara. Or is that just saying, look, when Adam HaRishon was created, how did God breathe in, as it were, the neshama? Through the nostrils. So, is this meant to be somehow a halakhic issue or not? Let's have a look at the Gemara which brings this pasuk in. The Gemara is discussing the following scenario. Tragic but fascinating scenario. A building collapses on Shabbos. There are people buried under the building. Potentially. We don't know who they are. We don't know if they're there. People are missing. Everyone's panicking. Are we allowed to break Shabbos, to pull the rubble off the building, which is breaking Shabbos perhaps on a Torah level? Are we allowed to do that in order to save people under the building? Yes or no? Yes. Absolutely. Are we allowed to do that if we think there may be people under the building but we're not sure? Yes or no? Are we allowed to do that if we think there may be people, but even if there are people, they may or may not be alive? Are we still allowed to do it?
Yes.
Meaning, even if we build multiple levels of Suffolk, we're always allowed to break Shabbos, even if there is a chance that someone may be alive. The question is, what happens when we discover a body? Because if the body is dead, if it's a dead body, you cannot break Shabbos for a dead body. Meaning you'll do what you can to keep it in a situation which was dignified, but you can't break Shabbos for the dead. It's not pikuach nefesh. So at the moment you find a body, you have to work out, is this body alive or dead? If the body is dead, I can't do anything else here. I'll have to try somewhere else for a live body. But if the person is alive, I'll do everything needed. How do you check if a person is alive or dead? Look at number 7. Tan Rabbanon, ad heichen hu boidik. Where do you check for life? So there are two opinions in the Gemara. Ad chotmo, until the nose. V'yeshamrim ad liboy. And the other opinion is to the heart. What is the debate here? I'm a Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, machloikas mimata lamala. The machloikas between the nose and the heart is only from the feet up. If you found the body legs first. Avol milamala lamata, but if you found the body head first, as soon as you check the breathing, shuv ein tzarach, that's all you need. Meaning if there's no breathing, it's dead. Second, diksiv, because he brings the pasuk, kol asher nishmat ruach chaim ba'apav. Meaning, from the flood there, with the life being in the nose. Therefore, says the Gemara, if you find a body, one opinion says the heart, one opinion says the nose. And Rav Papa comes in and says, but ultimately, if the nose comes first, that's the real one. That seems like that's the trump. Meaning once you check the breathing and there's no breathing, it doesn't seem necessary to check the heart. Now, are you going to conclude from this Gemara that given a choice between breathing, which today means brainstem activity, because that controls breathing, and heartbeat, the breathing wins? And there are some, we'll see soon what they're basing this on as well, that want to say yes. This Gemara is telling us that actually it's all about breathing. And in a conflict between breathing and heartbeat, breathing is the definition of death. Okay? Got a question or you?
It doesn't make sense to me to apply this Gemara today for like either the case of determining death or if a building falls. First of all, because even if a person is not breathing, they could still have a heartbeat. So like I feel like
we'll see Rashi talks about that a little bit. Yeah.
But like we know that medically.
Right.
And therefore it seems like this is based on like the medical opinion of the day, which we don't follow if we have better medical opinions.
Correct. If a person is not breathing, they won't have a heartbeat for very long.
Okay, but they could. Maybe you found them like a minute after they stopped breathing.
Correct. And maybe you can apply CPR, etc. But that, again, will be called reversible lack of breathing. And anything which is reversible is not considered a definition of death. We already said that.
Right.
So anything you can reverse, you'll reverse. But when you can't do anything for whatever reason, you don't know how to do CPR or whatever it is, or it's not a position, or it's not lying in a situation, you've just got a head. And the whole of the body is covered in rubble. There's nothing you can do to the body. You can't do CPR. There's a head, and there's no breathing. So the Gemara seems to say that's the end.
Isn't that just implying, though, that at the time of this Gemara, if a person wasn't breathing, they weren't able to be revived?
Maybe you can't. There's no question that this Gemara is not directly addressing the modern day case of organ donation. It is not. The question is, can it be applied analogously to the modern day case? This is not talking about a case where there's a lack of spontaneous breathing, but a clear heartbeat. Absolutely. Correct, absolutely. Anything you can do today to possibly, potentially keep this person alive has to be done. Okay? And therefore you're asking a very good question is, what is the relevance of this source to our scenario? Which is great. In the Yerushalmi, number 8, the actual version of this is presented in another interesting way. It doesn't mention the heart at all. Look in the Yerushalmi, number 8. If a building fell on the person on Shabbos, v'fakhim alav bishvil Yisrael shel Hashem. Actually, here Elishevi talks about Yisrael, but that's a different discussion, which is not for now. You uncover everything you need to uncover to save people. Ad Eichan, how far do you go? Train Amorim. There are two views. It says Chad Ama ad Chotmo. One says to the nostrils, the Chorone, but the other one says ad Tiburo, to the belly button. Doesn't mention the heart. What's the relevance of the belly button? Presumably the diaphragm. You see if there's breathing through the diaphragm. Meaning, according to the Yerushalmi, it sounds like both cases are actually breathing. there's either the nostril breathing or the diaphragm breathing. It doesn't even mention the heart. And in fact, the Rif and the Rosh, when they bring this halacha down, they bring it using the Lashon, using the version of the Yerushalmi. It doesn't even mention the heart. And even if you were to look at the heart, what did people think the heart did in those days? People, up until recent times, the last 400 or 500 years, believed that the heart was part of the breathing system. The in and out of the heart, the pumping of the heart, they didn't understand the circulatory system. It's only after Harvey and more recent centuries that they understood this. So I heard this from Rabbi Dr. Abraham Steinberg, actually, who's a very, we'll talk about him in a minute, he's a very important figure in this debate in Israel. He said that there actually isn't an opinion really that holds the heart. Because if it mentions the heart, it probably thinks it's breathing, and one of them doesn't even mention the heart, etc. Therefore, breathing seems to be critical. Now, the Shulchan Aruch, when it paskens this, clearly paskens breathing. Number 11. Even if you found a person crushed, they can only live for a minute. Nevertheless, you continue to break Shabbos. You go to the nostril. If you don't find any life in the nostrils, as vadai mace, then you know the person is dead. You don't need to go any further. It doesn't matter whether you got to the head first. It doesn't matter whether you got to the legs first. Again, breathing seems to be definitive. And therefore, there are, and obviously we didn't see the whole, all the sources by a long way. If you want a very detailed analysis, there is a 110-page analysis in English by the RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America, which was written 5 or 6 years ago, which you can download. I brought you a link a couple of pages from now. You can download that. You can spend your Shabbos reading 110 pages if you want to print it all off. Otherwise, you can do it on your iPad or whatever before you go to sleep. And you can read all about it. I'm bringing you just the headlines. But based on what we've seen so far, there is a very strong body of halakhic opinion that says breathing. Breathing is clearly the answer, and not heartbeat. Now, on the other hand, apart from your good question, which is, is this got anything to do with the modern scenario, there are problems even within the sugya. Look at Rashi. Rashi number 12. Rashi says, why do we not check for heartbeat? Number 12. One says check for the heart. Okay, or Mar Ama Akhaifan, the other one says check for the nostrils. Why? Why the nostrils? I underline this in Rashi number 12. The Zimnin de Einchias Nikabalibon. Because sometimes you can't detect a heartbeat. The Nikabachaitma, but you can still detect breathing. Rashi seems to say the reason we don't go for the heart is not because the heart is less definitive of life. It's because you can't feel a heartbeat. Everyone's running around and screaming and there's rocks everywhere and there's panic and you try to find, a heartbeat. I can't even feel my heart now. There's nothing happening. Baruch Hashem, something, somewhere is happening. I honestly can't feel. You're telling me that in all of that, like, breathing, at least you could put like a feather by the breath, by the mouth, or you could feel the chest if it's moving in any way. Meaning, Rashi's saying that heartbeat is just unreliable. But of course, if you know that there's a heartbeat, this is similar to what you're saying. If you know there's a heartbeat, are you going to tell me it doesn't matter? No, you're just trying to define what you can use. Look at number 13. Again, Rashi says, Im doimim lemeis, if you see someone with no movement, doimim, totally still, like a mace, she'enu matis evarav, that none of his limbs are moving. That's the case. How far do you go to establish the truth? Now that Rashi seems to make it very clear. If you have a patient who is totally still with no movement in any limb, that's the shiloh. What do you test for? Well, a patient on a machine in a hospital today with a very clear detected heartbeat. Are you going to tell me that person is still with no movement, and you can just ignore the heart and test for breathing, i.e., brainstem? Rashi makes it sound very like this is not what's going on here. In fact, many of the later opinions seem clearly to take the view that heartbeat is important. Look at number 14, the Chacham Tzvi in the 17th century. V'davar boro ma'od she'ein neshima ela kishiyesh chiyus b'leiv, that it depends on life in the heart. She'mimenu l'tercha hiya neshima, because ultimately everything he says comes from the heart. Similarly, Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he's defining this posik, everything that has life in its breath, he says this doesn't define that's where life is from. We'll see Rav Moshe Feinstein more in a few minutes. And it's just telling you, actually, that this is often an identifiable test. Therefore, many people reject the view that this Gemara is an indication the brain cell death is successful. They say, no, you need to have heart activity totally cease before you can take out organs, which, as we said, means that effectively you can't be an organ donor for most things. There is also a Chassan Sofer. Chassan Sofer was one of the first people to really define halachically moments of death. He is writing in the 1800s. Look what he says in number 16. Aval kol, he gives a text. Kol she'achar she'mutl ke'evin doimeh. A little bit like we saw in Rashi. If we see that there is no movement, no life in the body, ve'ein bo mishum defika, and there is no pulse in the body, or heartbeat, im achar kach bottle neshima, and then the breathing stops, eino ala dibritzer, esene kadosh shikumet. Then we know that he's dead. So again, people point to this Chassan Sofer and say, well, somebody on hooked up to an ECG, that we can see all sorts of stuff going on in the body, that doesn't satisfy this test, it's mortal care of endowment. Other people will say, no, that doesn't take away from the fact that he's brain dead, and maybe he's just talking about whether it's reversible or irreversible. It's not the same question. And therefore, what you're left with here is a very big disagreement. And we'll talk about who's on which side of this disagreement in a few minutes. There is one more piece of information before we get into the whole analysis of what happens today, which is a Mishnah in Ohalot. Have a look, please, at number 17. This is the second main source. It says like this. We sometimes need to know whether a person is dead or alive, or an animal is dead or alive, or have built between an animal and a person, because a dead animal gives off tumah, impurity. A dead lizard, a dead sheret, a dead mouse, and Lahabdil, a dead person, also gives up impurity. How do we know, let's say we're dealing with an animal, whether it's dead or alive? So the Mishnah says, well, one thing is for sure. If you chop the animal's head off, or if the animal lost its head, then it's dead. Ah, what if it's still twitching, or it's still moving? That doesn't mean it's alive. It's just like residual twitching, which is just the end, basically. Have a look at number 17. Adam Einu Matana Asher Teitzei Nashem. A person is only tame when their neshama leaves them, when they die. Vafilu Gos says, even a person who is almost dead, by the way, this is an important point, a goses is somebody who is very close to death, and halachically, you can't do anything that will actually push them over the edge. Which raises another interesting question, which is if a person is almost dead, and by doing some kind of a medical test to see if they're dead, that might be the thing that kills them, then you haven't even a shaila as to whether you can do that medical test, which is another question. If you think it'll save them, that's a different question, but that's part of the shaila. Similarly, an animal is only dead when it's dead, when it's the shama leaves it, okay, when its soul has left it. Whatever an animal's soul means, I'm not getting into that now. Dogs and cats have the shamas. You know, they're not people, and I don't know how fond you are of your little furry friends, but that's not for them. Hutsu reshehem, but if they have their heads chopped off, says this Mishnah, apal pisha mafarchasim tamein. Even if they're twitching, they're tamei, to going no less than this, it's similar to the case of a zanavsha, the tail of a lizard, shehi mafarchasim, which is twitching. Now, come along certain people, and I brought you a source in English, I'm not going to read in detail now, number 18. This is by Dr. Fred Rosner. Fred Rosner is a very important medic, physician in America, medical ethics. Many of the classic works in English on medical ethics and halacha have been written by Dr. Fred Rosner for the last 40 years. And he wrote this article, and he says, just like physical decapitation is an absolute sign of death, so too physiological decapitation should be no different. Meaning, if you have a patient where the brain is effectively disconnected from the body, the brain stem is dead, there's no communication, that person is effectively decapitated, but the brain's not there. So that is surely a sign of death, just like decapitation. Ah, the heart's still beating? No. The heart beating is simply a sign of molecular life continuing after the body has died, and it's not a sign that the person is alive, it's a sign that the heart's alive. But that is not the same as the person being alive, just like there can be other organs twitching, it's not the same as life. They are the main sources. And what I want to do with you now is just two last things. First of all, I want to talk about how the different opinions stack up a little bit. And then I want to give a couple of minutes on other related topics. As I said to you before, what you have today is really a major machlokes between two very heavyweight halakhic sides. I brought you here the main arguments for and against. Here are the arguments for organ donation and brainstem death. Number one, halakha defines death as cessation of respiration. We get that from Gemara in Yomim, that's how you learn it. This is equivalent to brainstem death. Number two, halakha defines decapitation as death. Brainstem death is equivalent to decapitation. Okay? And certain poskim have been quoted quite frequently as being in favor of this. Two of the poskim that have been often quoted as being at least sympathetic or positive about brainstem death are Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. However, I want to make it absolutely clear, both of those poskim said a lot of very different things which can be read in different ways on this topic. And part of that RCA article that I recommended to you, it has about 30 pages analysing the different opinions of Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And it's one of those things where each side kind of claims them for themselves. Rav Moshe seems very clearly during his life and his tshuvas to be negative about brainstem death and say that it's not acceptable. But then there's a letter which came out after Rav Moshe died, was published after he died, okay, posthumously, which seems to indicate that he was more in favour of brainstem death. The question is, how authentic and reliable is that posthumous letter? Is that really what he meant? He never got to write it. He never got to agree with it. And then, of course, you have all the oral testimony. This one says, I spoke to that one, who spoke to Rav Moshe, who told this, and that. If you want to go through it blow by blow, go through the RCR article. Okay? Everyone claims Rav Moshe was on their side. But Shlomo Zalman also had a lot of very different things to say. You need to really analyze them. It's not so simple to say that they support it. However, what is absolutely straightforward is that the Israeli rabbinate does support brainstem death. Absolutely. And the new Israeli law in 2008 set out various different criteria by which you could determine that the brainstem was dead, and there are different tests, and on the last page, I'm not doing it now, that the doctors have to be certified by a committee of people who have trained them to test, but you can't just get any old, intern coming and say, oh yeah, he's brainstem, turn him off. You can't do that. It has to be someone trained. They train by a committee. The committee has ethicists and religious leaders and different religions and all sorts of things. So there's a whole system. The Israeli rabbinate are in favour. Big names, people you may have heard of, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg, Rav Avraham Shapira, Rabbi Dr. Abraham Steinberg, who I said to you before is a very important person. He himself is the Israel Prize laureate. Sorry, he's the head of the medical ethics unit at Shaarei Tzedek Medical Hospital. Big, big people, and he's a very big Talmud Chacham. They are in favor of brainstem death. They are in favor of people carrying organ donor cards. By the way, it's not as simple as just a standard driver's license organ donor card, because that doesn't necessarily have the same checks and balances like in America. There are halachic ways to sign organ donor cards. And there is an organization called HODS, the Halachic Organ Donor Society, which you can go on, I suggest you do if you want to be a donor organ donor, especially in America, and they will give guidance as to how to most halachically, acceptably, be an organ donor there. And again, I don't think it's just a matter of signing a driver's license form. You need to actually go on that site. They've got on the site, pictures of 100 smiling rabbis carrying their organ donor cards from different parts of the American rabbinic world. And if you want to be a donor, I suggest you look at that. However, that's really, HODS at the end of the day are a bit one-sided. They really want to push organ donation. They kind of have a bit of the other arguments, but not as strong as the other people put them. Because against, there's a lot of stuff as well. Against, people say, no, halacha requires heart activity to cease. Okay, brain death is not acceptable. Anatomical decapitation is not the same as physiological decapitation. Okay, an animal with a missing organ be a trapha, but it's a non-functional organ is not the same. Missing and non-functional are not the same. So how can you transfer from decapitation to brainstem death? It's not acceptable. And there are very big heavyweights poskim saying no way. People like Rabbi Eliashib, people like the Tzitzeliezer Rabbi Eliezer Voldenberg, people like Rav Shmuel Vosner, Rav Yitzchak White. These were very big people. And even in America today, in the centrist sometimes what's called modern Orthodox, although people don't like using that word, the centrist Orthodox world, you have big names who are very against. Rav Herschel Schechter, Rav Mordechai Willig, Rav J. David Bleich, very important person on this, a lot of medical ethics stuff, and also Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, were against. Some of them said it was for sure murder to do this. So where does that leave you? That leaves you with a big debate. Both sides, I personally, I'll to be quite honest with you, I don't know which way to jump on this one, because I have different posts that I legitimately ask questions to on halakhic issues, and I know pretty much for sure that one will say, yes, raise them there, get an organ donor card and do a mitzvah in Israel, and the other one will say, absolutely not, it is, there's nothing to talk about, it's totally unacceptable. And I don't even know who to ask Shaila to, because who I choose to ask the Shaila to will probably determine the answer, and I don't feel intellectually honest in asking the Shaila that way. Yes?
So if there's such a big machloket, and when this machloket, like, sometimes you can be more stringent or more lenient, like, what's considered the more stringent position? Because one way you're more stringent,
there's no stringent lenient. Because on the one hand, pikuach nefesh, we can be more stringent to save lives. On the other hand, it's not pikuach nefesh to kill people in order to save lives. You cannot just say it. You can't err on the side of caution on this one. That's what makes it hard. Last point before I leave you, because I don't want to take you over time, there are a few other issues as well, which are easier to deal with. First of all, post-mortem organ transplantation. Now, this is, can we develop technology that actually allows us to do organ transplants after the heart has stopped as well? And by the way, they're working on this. There's a lot of activity in the medical profession on this, on broadening the base of organ donors to allow people to donate even after the heart has stopped. Up until now, it's really not been so possible, but it may become much more possible, and this will make it much easier. Because then, even the person that say no to brain death can be saying yes to heart death, and organ donation can be more possible. So that's moving. By the way, this is not the same as there's something called DCD, donation after cardiac death. That's not the same. That happens in certain hospitals in America where they can stop the heart, and when the heart stopped, even though they could have restarted it, when the heart stopped, they take the organs out. That we're not going to go ahead with, because if you can restart the heart, then you have to. So that's not so straightforward. But if you can work out post-mortem organ donations, that will be definitely better. There's an interesting ethical question, is if you hold that it's halakhically unacceptable to donate or to harvest organs, are you allowed to accept one if you needed one, God forbid? Or is that hypocritical, etc.? And the answer to that, you can read it in the English, is yes, it is acceptable for all sorts of reasons. There is a complicated debate on this, and it's not something that you need to necessarily, you know, you can rely on the other opinions to accept the organ. And the last thing I wanted to just mention is important, which is live donation, and with this we'll finish, which is that there are many things that one can do when one's alive to help other people. Obviously, you can't donate your heart or your lungs. It's not going to leave you in a good state, but you can donate a kidney, and it's a big mitzvah to donate a kidney, as long as there's not going to be a significant risk to the donor, and that risk can be, have to be analysed, you know, on an individual subjective basis. For example, they ask whether women who are going to get pregnant should donate a kidney, because they don't have to run their pregnancy on one kidney, which is not so straightforward. But in principle, there is a mitzvah. There may not be a chiyuv, there may not be an obligation, because you can't obligate someone to do something which may endanger them somewhat. But once you end up with things like blood donations and bone marrow, there's nothing to talk about. There's almost no danger at all. And yet there's a very strong chance of making a massive difference. Therefore, there is clearly a halakhic obligation to be a blood donor, to be a bone marrow donor if you can, and it's not going to cause, you know, health issues depending on the person. That clearly is very important. I feel myself in a difficult situation, because I actually am a universal blood type. I have blood that will suit every single human on the planet, and yet nobody will touch it with a barge pole, because I'm English, and I was living in England in the 1980s, and therefore my blood is off limits, as I suspect yours might be. You might be just
I'm
older.
I'm not allowed to give, though. I'm not allowed to.
It's interesting. Why? Okay, fine. So you have personal health issues. Keep the blood inside you. I can give, Baruch Hashem, I used to give blood all the time in England. I'm very happy to give blood, but nobody will touch it because they're worried about what my cow
disease. Isn't it clear, that you don't have my cow disease?
They're worried, God forbid, everyone's going to wake up one morning going moo, and whatever. You know. Anyway, I hope that was of use. Please God, we should all have a bracha. Hashem should bless us. We should be healthy. I've made the Eshim Shana. Okay? But nevertheless, these things are really important to think about too. And hopefully that was of some educational value. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to give a minute or two over. Whose is this?
Over.
Yes.
Can you elaborate in like a really short period of time on the general equation framework for like people who have an infection on you?
Just
what's the like